I'm Emma Greed, and I'm the host of the Aspire podcast, a show where I talk to the world's most brilliant minds about building the life of your dreams. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
This is WEEI Afternoons
with Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy-Stevens,
and three-time Super Bowl champion Ted Johnson on WEEI.
Last Friday night, we watched the Celtics get blown out by the New York Knicks to advance to the Eastern Conference Finals. So we are in the offseason here on WEEI Afternoons, but we get one last chat with Brian Scalabrine, NBC Sports Boston. Scal is brought to you by Shaw's and Star Market, perfecting the art of fresh, by John Sewer and Drain Cleaning, the name to know when the drains don't flow, and by findmassmoney.gov. Scal, how we doing this week? And can you explain to me why I'm watching Pacers, Knicks, and not the Celtics advancing?
I mean, it all goes back to those two games that we blew. Like, if you don't blow those games, you're obviously, you're up 2-0. The Celtics losing that series, but, and I get, okay, if you blow it, blow one of those leads, but to kind of get trapped like that twice, that's where it all started. And like, think about it. Like, people think, well, you could still win the series. That means, like, theoretically, you played well enough to beat a team 6 out of 7 times, and then four times in a row during the season, during the regular season. So then the Jason Tatum injury is like, it was a disastrous finish to, I think, all of us expecting like that team to walk through the playoffs.
You know, Scal, just talking about that, you know, kind of game six, you know, coming off of the great, you know, game five that the team had without JT. I mean, when you look at just kind of how the game six played out, I mean, just it was a blowout. It was never close to you. I don't know. I mean, part of me wants to judge the organization and maybe even a little bit of JB to some degree. Do you think that the way they played in game six is an indictment to the organization or to JB at all? How do you look at the way the season ended with that performance in game six?
Not like that. I think when I like kind of break down that game, I think, all right, Derek White got going in game five. We talked about Derek White. And then, like, I don't know how you see it, but the way I watch it, as the Celtics were coming down in transition, you should see, like, the individual guys that would sprint to Derek White 35 feet from the basket, and they were just like, we cannot allow Derek White to make any transition threes. So they take one of our, you know, that was 34 points, and, you know, for basketball, if you start making shots early, other things open up, and, you know, momentum and all that stuff. So they did a good job of taking him out of this scenario. And then, you know, all year long, never, like, the players are clearly good enough, like Holiday, Brown, you know, those guys, Porzingis, who obviously had the illness. Those guys are good enough to carry a team, or they could do it collectively. But once Tatum was out, it was weird that we had nowhere to go at that point. And Brown is usually really dominated with, you know, when he has space. If you just, Tatum's out there, White, and then Porzingis, and people are really worried about him. Brown's allowed to get to the paint, play off 2 feet, kind of pivot around, and then score. And so that was, like, not going to happen anymore. The Knicks had a great rim protection in Mitchell Robinson and Karl Anthony Towns. And then for Brown, he just didn't have another place to go. And, you know, for him, it would be, like, that's something that you have to learn. You have to learn how to break down defenses. You have to learn how to see two players that are leaning towards you and then hit the right guy at the right time. So there's a lot of things that, and it took Tatum a long time. Like, I always thought last year he just started coming into his own. This year he was incredible at reading all the coverages and making the right play, but that takes time. So obviously we were great because Derek White had it going, and then Jaylen Brown was ridiculous defensively, high energy and all that, but that's hard to sustain, and that was a hard carryover. And the Knicks were impressive. You have to admit, like, of all the games they played, that was, forget the 20-point comeback, that was the most impressive game that they played.
But, Scal, I think something that Celtics fans have been wondering ever since the season ended so unceremoniously last Friday night was, how does a team go from playing what might be their best game of the season, if not the last couple of years, to how the hell does the team play easily their worst game of the year, if not the last several decades, all within a span of 48 hours?
Because you're not factoring in the other team, and, you know, the other team went shot for shot with the Celtics and and we were playing great. Both teams were playing great basketball at the end of the first half of game five. You know, I think we were close. Both teams shooting close to 50% from three and moving the ball and like playing out of their mind. And then the third quarter happened. So, you know, it was one quarter where the Knicks probably mailed it in and the Celtics kept bombing threes. And, you know, water kind of finds its level. So I think the margins are a lot smaller. Like, we probably didn't play as great as you might think if you're looking at the opponent. And then vice versa. Like, the Knicks, you know, once they got up by a certain amount, like, our team just didn't have the horsepower to come back or the energy based off what they led in game five. Like, it's not – you know, if those were separated out by, you know, 2 weeks, you can make that argument. But just with 2 days, and then also, you know, I started out by saying give the Knicks credit. When Derek White was on the floor in game six, watch the difference. I've never seen – this is like the reaction to the way they treated Derek White was the same reaction that you see with Steph Curry. Like, people lose their minds running out to Steph Curry, two guys, just to not give up a three from Steph, and they give up a wide open dunk from Draymond Green. Like, that was the Knicks' decision. And I can tell you right away, like, right when I saw that game, I'm saying, okay, well, today is going to be a day where it's going to be really hard for Derek White to get free. And he had 34. So now he has to deal with the idea of getting face guarded like Steph Curry. But Steph Curry can also go for 40, but he's seen that coverage, you know, 10,000 times in his life, I would assume.
Brian Scalabrine, NBC Sports Boston, joining us on WEEI Afternoons. Along those lines, you talk about an adjustment they made on Derek White. Did you think Tibbs outcoached Mazzulla in this series? Was there a coaching advantage for the Knicks that played out in addition to the shooting and the injuries and everything else that played?
I don't look at anything like that. Like, this guy outcoached that guy, and I know that people like to use that term, but the Knicks outplayed the Celtics in game one and two. In the third, halfway through the third quarter and the fourth quarter. So I would point to that, and there's no doubt about it. Now, I'm as critical as anybody about I've countless times on the broadcast, and I see sometimes we would still squeeze out a win. And when you lose 1 of 82, it's not that big of a deal, but in the playoffs, it obviously is. But, and I've always said this, like, look at our pace as the game goes along. We're one of the slowest teams in the fourth quarter, and I've always, like, lived by this. Now, I'm not the coach, and I don't know what Joe knows. I just know when, like, we're at our best, like, we're kind of pushing the ball. And it doesn't mean, like, I'm not like my man Tommy, where I'm like, run no matter what, even though it would be interesting if we ran no matter what, how good this team would be. And, like, I always think, like, okay, when you run and you have more talent – and you move the ball because you have, like, this unique system where you have five guys on the court that can bomb a three. So why wouldn't you just continue to put the teams in rotation and then bomb threes, right? I would think, why would you ever, with a team like this, ever dribble the ball for 20 seconds and take a step back? I don't think that would – I don't know if I would ever think that that's okay. But it does seem like we get a 20-point lead, and in the second half, we, like, start walking the ball up the court. Now – I know there's a reason for it. I have no idea what that reason is, but it caught us. It caught us. It cost us, I can't say a championship, but I could definitely say it cost us game one and game two, and I just don't understand it. And I wish there was a reason, and I wish there was something that I didn't, like, that I knew. Well, here's, when you have this guy, this is what you want to do. Or were they practicing for something that I was unaware of? But, like, that kind of stuff is hard to win. And if I was the other team, what I would do is exactly what teams do. They crash four guys to the glass. So we're going to walk the ball up anyways. You have no threat at all of giving up a layup. So it's not just, wait, we can walk the ball up. Like, there's more to it. Like, now they get offensive rebounds and confidence, and they get to the free throw line. There's a lot that goes into it. Basketball is not an offense or defense game. Everything is connected. A bad shot leads to a break. A missed layup leads to a five-point swing. Walking the ball up the court leads to teams wanting to push and fight on the offensive glass and crashing four. Historically, in the NBA, you crash four, you get burned. But we don't burn people in the second half for whatever reason. I mean, go look at our fast break points in the second half. It's like, it should never be the case when you have this much talent. But there is a reason. I just don't know what it is.
All right, Scal, one of my questions, and Dan Ball can vouch for it because I wrote it down right here. My question number six for Scal was, do you have a hard time giving New York credit? Well, you have given them credit, especially against how they played the Celtics. But just in general, what do you think? How does the Eastern Conference Finals play out? I mean, are the Knicks, do you think, a championship medal team? How do you see things playing out between them and the Pacers?
So, all full transparency, like, I've known Jalen Brunson since he was like in ninth grade or something like that. I played for Tibbs and Rick Brunson in Chicago, and Jalen used to come by afterwards, and I thought the way that Rick Brunson would ride Jalen while he worked him out, I was like, man, that's tough, man. This guy's like really hard on his kid. And I'm like, and I'm pretty hard on my kid, right? And I was like, man, how can this kid endure this stuff, right? So if any kid could endure like the attention to detail that Rick Brunson, I kind of worked with him, I was like, okay, this kid has a special mindset, and he does. That's the reality. One in high school, never went to like, I'm going to go to the best school and be like the sixth man. Like, he just went to the school. AAU is the same thing. Like, played in the local AAU tournament. Went to Villanova, won. Went to Dallas, no Luka Doncic, won. Going to the Knicks, he won. So we should give him a lot of credit. And I think, like, where I stand is, I got to give those other guys a lot more credit than I did. Like, I like Josh Hart, but I thought they would miss DiVincenzo. And I thought, like, Karl-Anthony Towns is, like, not what they needed. But clearly it all worked out. But just like anything, and I'll be the first to admit it, I'm not anything as a player unless I'm with a really good player. And I got a chance to play with Jason Kidd early on, and Rondo and Pierce and Garnett and Allen and like those guys, right? That allows me to be a better NBA player than I actually was. So I think like Brunson has that gravity towards him. The rest of those guys, like, they kind of gain their confidence from Brunson. But I was shocked. Are they championship medal? They don't look like it. But I think Brunson, a lot like Steph Curry, and I've coached Steph and I've been around Brunson, they got a lot of similarities in their mindset. And I think that kind of holds true with why those two have had a lot of success.
Yep. I can't wait for the Pacers to win in five. Scal, sorry.
You hate the Knicks fans?
I saw them throw trash at that guy. Come on. Get out of here with that nonsense. Throwing trash on the guy in the Tyrese Halliburton jersey.
Yeah, I know.
That's not cool.
That is so rude, man. I know, but
making Eagles fans look nice.
Yeah. I mean, but like, if you watch Brunson, don't you think, like, the guy's 6'1". Look what he does. Like, he's
awesome.
Incredible. He's incredible.
I did want to ask one thing. In the aftermath of the Game 6 loss, as most Celtics fans probably quickly turned the TV off or just went to binge drinking and, you know, streaming stuff on their televisions, you did say that you felt like at times they cheated the game. Could you explain that to us? And was that in regards to the series, the season, or both?
Yeah, a little bit of both. Like, just like... probably more the games 1 and 2, but like in the 82 games, you know, like you can have bad habits and still win games. Like I would say, like, our 2010 team kind of did that a little bit. Like, just didn't have like the right winning habits, didn't have the same winning habits that they had the year before, and then that in turn comes back to bite you. That's just how it works, and it came back to bite us. Like, we had a 13-point lead in the fourth quarter. I probably could have won that, but then, you know, maybe the habits of cheating the game throughout the season. Like, I know people like want to like think the regular season doesn't matter. It does matter. Like, the habits you build in the regular season matter. And so, you know, you watch that team and you watch how they kind of like got snake bit a few times by, you know, hey, we're okay, it's a long season, we can miss shots. And I would say no problem if you're missing shots, but if it's not that big of a deal, then why does it affect your defense on the other end? How are you giving up 38 points in the fourth quarter to the Knicks? And I could say the exact same thing about Minnesota last night. I don't know if you guys caught that game, but yeah, we got some wide open shots and we missed. Okay, great. If that's not that big of a deal, okay, then why do you give up 70 in the second half then? If you're not affected by those missed shots, then why are you giving up 70? So then I would say, all right, well, if you are having to be affected a little bit more than you say you are, then all of a sudden, then you would drive it and you would move it and you would do some things different just to forget offense for 1 second, just to set your defense, right? And that's where I felt like they, you know, like, if everything is based off of makes and misses and we miss some wide open shots and it's not that big of a deal, then how come when we watch, it looks like a big deal? How come it looks like everyone slumps their shoulders and gets back on defense and we give up offensive rebounds and all those things, if it's not that big of a deal. So that's where I kind of feel like, you know, are you building championship habits? Last year, there was no doubt. Now, I think the East is better, no doubt about that. But you building championship habits to start and you just keep on going. And you have slip-ups. Everyone does. But you don't blow two 20-point leads at home in the third from the third quarter. It's actually never happened in NBA playoff history that a team blew two 20-point leads. Think about that. Ever. Not ever in an entire playoff series, a playoff run, it happened in back-to-back nights.
Not the history we thought the Celtics would be making, but Scal, we're in the offseason. Brad Stevens held his press conference. He kind of deflected a lot of the big-picture questions the other day. Seems like a lot of people on the outside are expecting changes, trades, Porzingis, guys not back. Are you of that mindset? Are you not quite sure yet? How would you handicap this offseason we're embarking on?
Yeah, I don't know. I went into that press conference. My boy Kevin Miller wanted me to work thinking that Brad was going to make some firework announcements. That was like we're really disappointed. Of course you're disappointed. We knew you were disappointed that you lost. What are you going to do about it? You know, yep. So I don't know. And I think they probably could have had a plan beforehand, and then Jason Tatum gets hurt. It has to reevaluate your plan. So, you know, I if you would ask me if Jason Tatum was healthy and all these things, I'd probably have a different answer. With the Tatum injury, when is he coming back? I don't know. Are they going to apply for a designated player exception? Like there's all kinds of things that I have no idea what they're going to do. So I'm being honest. I have no idea what they're going to do.
Who do you think? Is there any untouchables? I mean, is Jaylen Brown, D. White, anybody you see on this team as just untouchable? First trades.
Oh, that's a good question, Ted. That's a loaded question. I'll just lie. I'll lie to you. Ready? I'll lie to you. Brown, Tatum, and White, untouchable. Pritchard at his number, untouchable. Those are four untouchables. All right. I'll give you that. That's it. By the way, Ted, I don't even know if you know. That's a great loaded question on your part, and I give you a ton of credit for doing it, my man.
It's my last one. I wanted to slide in real quick there. I appreciate you indulging me.
Good one. That was a good one, Ted. That's worse than you doing the 24 push-ups to my, or pull-ups to my two.
There was one other something I heard. I think it was actually on the podcast with LeBron and Steve Nash. Scal.
Bored?
They accused them of being bored. I mean, could you ever imagine a Celtics team in any iteration under any coach, especially with this pedigree, being bored with themselves? And if so, do you think next season with Tatum out reverses that potential trend? If so.
Yeah, I'll tell you, I'll go even one step further. They look bored when they're healthy and whole. When they were shorthanded, they didn't look bored. And it didn't look boring for us. But for whatever reason, when they were whole, and I guess towards the end of the year, it trended a little bit better. But go look at the number. Compare, all right, you could do some work and you could tell your fans, right? Compare last year's starting five net rating to this year's starting five. Same starting five last year to this year. And look at the difference. That, to me, looks like you're bored with the details and bored with the process. But I know when they had guys out, like, you know, Luke Kornet was like a net rating darling all year long. Like, he's a backup. So for whatever reason, they had like a little bit of a spark when Kornet comes into the game, and it looked different. So, yeah, everyone, like, uses their own language. Bored, to me, is like not focusing on attention to detail, right? It's like not doing the little things that it takes to win throughout the 82-game season. And really, when you're up by 13 in the second half or whatever it may be. But, yeah, I think there's probably a little bit of, like, that's LeBron's version of saying, like, you know, not having championship habits.
Scal, not that this is an option, I don't think, but I'm a huge JB fan, and yet earlier in the week I admitted that if I could pull it off, find some way to do it, I would absolutely trade him for the number one pick, Cooper Flagg. Would you make that deal?
That's another loaded question.
Just doing our job, buddy.
I would avoid that one as well. I'll steer clear of that one. I mean, I'm giving you my answer, but yeah, I'll steer clear of that one.
Yeah.
Too.
So, okay, an easy one to end on then before we let you go. I saw that Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is going to win the MVP. I think that was expected. Is that where your vote would have gone, or do you think Jokic is still the best basketball player?
Jokic is still the best basketball player, probably the most impactful basketball player, but it's just how it goes, right? Like, voter fatigue, and by the way, like, SGA's advanced analytics, now the UPS guy is upset at me too for the Celtics losing. SGA's advanced analytics would also point to like a very good on-court, off-court, and all those things. So there's a lot where it's not just he put up monster numbers and it didn't affect winning. They both affected winning, and he put up monster numbers as well. So I think I would have went that direction as well.
Hey, Andy, real quick, I just want to ask
you. You want to say hi to WEI? Say hi. Say hi.
I want to say hi to you first.
He's mad at me.
Hi, UPS.
He's mad that the Celtics lost.
That's awesome. What's up, bro? Hey, just SGA's game. Do you? A lot of people, I don't know, kind of harken to maybe like a James Harden kind of game about how he draws. You like his game? It's aesthetically, you enjoy it?
Yeah. I'll tell you why. Because he leads the league in drives. I like guys that drive to the basket.
Yeah.
He gets rewarded. He don't settle for three. Those guys.
Finally.
All right. You wanted the picture? Gotcha. See ya.
Hi, UPS guys.
This is amazing.
That's awesome. Take care of those guys.
Sir. Yes, sir.
Hey.
All right.
Hey. Life of Scal.
All right. Because he leads the league in drives, and I like guys that go to the basket. And everyone's like, he's a foul merchant. Well, I mean, there are a lot of guys in the league are just pulling up from three. At least he's getting downhill. So there's a reason he does get to the free throw line, because he does drive. Now, does he know how to accentuate contact? Yes. If you James Harden, not so much. One thing to look at, Ted, if you're looking at SGA, there's only two players in the history of the NBA to average 30 points and less than two turnovers, Michael Jordan and SGA.
Great stat.
Dang.
Did not know that. Okay.
All right, Scal, we're going to let you go before the FedEx guy, the Amazon guy, whoever else comes by and joins the show. Enjoy the offseason, and we'll talk to you down the road. And I'm also taking it as a yes that you would trade Jaylen Brown for Cooper Flagg, but no one needs to know. We'll just move on. Thanks, Scal.
All right, I'll talk to you guys.
Yeah. Thanks, bud.
Amen. Brian Scalabrine, NBC Sports Boston, joining us here on WEEI Afternoons, as well as his UPS delivery man. We appreciate him chiming in with his opinions, his disappointment on the Celtics. Up next, we will react a little to Scal, but we also need to get to the Patriots, OTAs. You read all the blogs and recaps from yesterday. What'd you feel good about? What'd you feel bad about? And I'm not just fixating on Drake May. A little Patriots OTA talk up next here on WEEI Afternoons.
WEEI Afternoons with Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy-Stevens, and Ted Johnson.
That was Chris Gasper breaking down the OTA day that Drake May had yesterday in Foxborough. WEEI Afternoons broadcasting live from the Ford Clubhouse Fenway Studios. Brought to you by your New England Ford dealers and F-Series. Hurry in to get employee pricing on the full lineup of vehicles. Ford, from America, for America. Do we take that? So there were four interceptions yesterday. There was some bad throws. There were some sacks taken. That's where a lot of the notebooks and the blogs and everything focus their attention. So is that, Ted Johnson, is that an acceptable excuse the first time the media saw Drake May to see him maybe processing and struggling early on in the Josh McDaniels offense?
Yes, because that was the excuse I gave yesterday's show. So I got to back my play.
Wait, I thought you didn't allow excuses.
You're right.
I'm Emma Greed, and I'm the host of the Aspire podcast, a show where I talk to the world's most brilliant minds about building the life of your dreams. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
It runs counter to a lot of my core principles. But for this one thing, I will grant a little bit of leeway to Drake May. I think there is some truth to that. Part of me, and I don't know, we'll see what my 3-point stance will be tomorrow. But part of me, I mean, listening to myself, I was listening, going driving home, and I was like, man, I sure made a lot of excuses for Drake May. And I hear other people do as well.
Yeah.
And I have a hard time just letting the thought of what is, I think, in the minds of a lot of Patriots fans, you guys, is that maybe he's not a franchise quarterback. It's hard for me. I mean, you hear about the interceptions, and then did you hear about the pass he threw to Javon Baker in yesterday's practice? The back shoulder beauty down the right side, Andy?
Uh-huh.
And you go, I can't square up seeing him make these brilliant plays along with these other bad plays and just think that he's going to be a bad quarterback. I think he has this potential because you see these brilliant plays. And so that's kind of what I lean into. But I think early on, initially, I think there's some I think it's okay to give him a little bit of a pass based on the system. And I was listening to Gasper last night on Boston BST, and he was basically saying that that they are not trimming down any of the system. Like, it's not kind of a we're going to take it slow. I guess he's thrown the entire book at him. And so that might explain some of maybe some of the bad decisions. So I wish they did. I wish they did trim the playbook at least a little bit. But it, according to Hunter Henry, who spoke about this yesterday, and some people that Gasper talked to, they have not trimmed the offensive playbook down for Drake May. And that might be why you saw the performance you saw in yesterday's practice.
Yeah, I'd say you cut him now. Just get as quick as you can. Start getting the Pastrnak up to speed. See if Dallas can undo the Joe Milton trade or if they'll take a fourth back for him. I mean, come on. The overreaction. Andy, I understand. Not coming from our show, but just wherever people have to, like, get their clicks, engage the audience, et cetera, et cetera. Is it a cause for a little concern? Maybe. If we're going to do this on a 1 to 10 concern scale, I'll give it a 1. Maybe a 1.5, but we've heard
it is 4 interceptions and 5 in 4 out of 8 pass attempts.
Yeah, I know, but it's also May 20th.
It's bad.
It's terrible, but it's also May 20th. And the Josh McDaniels book might be an awful lot for him, even though Josh supposedly went on this college football infused spiritual journey, and he's going to come to Josh the same way Drake the same way Drake needs to come to him. There are an awful lot of new parts gelling, which I believe even you may have pointed out previously, Dan Ball. Like, it's hard to pick them for 10, 11, 12 wins when you have this many new elements, even though Josh McDaniels is very familiar and we see Mike Vrabel and we think, oh, Ted Johnson, Tom Brady, Super Bowls. Like, there's a lot coming together. So let's give it a chance to, I don't know, learn and then acclimate, and then it'll coalesce. But the talent is there. Come on now.
I would also throw in real quick for you guys that you didn't have Stephon Diggs there yesterday. He was not a participant, and I know it's a pie in the sky comparison, but the Drake May Josh Allen early year comp was made last year, and Stephon Diggs was a huge part being the security blanket to kind of work out some of those interception issues. So again, it's day two of OTAs, but I think it's worth noting that you didn't have your supposed number one receiver there either.
And also,
go ahead, Andy, go.
The relationship with Brian Daboll was a big part of the evolution of Josh Allen, and this is Josh McDaniels a month into whatever that relationship is going to be with Drake May in terms of harnessing the good and you know, getting him. I think right now Josh's biggest goal is probably to get him to succeed on the easy stuff. Drake, I know you can do the hard stuff. I know you can roll right, throw left, roll right, drop it in the bucket down the sideline. I know you can do the hard stuff. I need you to prove to me that 9 times out of 10, you can do the easy stuff, that you can take Hunter Henry over the middle, that you can take Pop Douglas on a quick developing route and just make the easy throw. And I'm guessing that's what he's kind of beating into his head right now.
Yeah, I would think so. And then you kind of read, two of the pass attempts were to Travion Henderson. So I was about to say, hey, yep, take just the check down. Well, wait a minute. I mean, throw two interceptions to the running back? Wait, yes. Throw a pick on a check down. That's
you don't see that often. See that too often.
You don't. And I'm gonna say this. I'm gonna frame it this way. Does it make anybody feel better if I put it to you this way? So, started off, first 8 pass attempts, 4 interceptions. The last 8 pass attempts, I think it was 7 for 8. He finished strong, and I will say this, to me, that's the mark of a great quarterback. I remember when Peyton got into the league early in 1998, and he would throw 3 interceptions in the first half.
Yep.
And he'd be like, toast the second half. He comes out and he throws 4 touchdowns in the second half. It's, if you can let go of your mistakes and not let them affect you, that to me is the mark of a really good quarterback. And so I like that he finished the practice strong after getting off to a bad start. He didn't let his mistakes, affect the second part. So that's something to, from a positive perspective, to pull back.
Yeah, and also, can we also perhaps maybe tip our cap to, or in that positive side of things, like, oh, maybe this Christian Gonzalez is even better than we thought. I mean, he picked out 2 of the 4, Ted.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, let's give the defense their props. I mean, it wasn't like he was like, Drake wasn't supposedly, did anyone say like Drake was running around with the ball like, what do I do with this? Like, it was like he, people can read his body. Like, these are all, and this is, don't you want them to be like worked down now so that you can teach them up? Like, they've got 4 months almost till kickoff, 3.5 months till kickoff. Like, now is when you want them throwing 4, 5, 6. I don't care how many picks. Like, you have to have teachable.
Well, you don't ever want him throwing 4 or 5 picks. Yeah. No, like, he's okay, not a freshman quarterback who's putting on pads for the first time. Like, he's an NFL franchise quarterback who went number 3 overall in the draft. There should be a certain level of competency that you standard, expect any time he takes the field. My positive spin fits.
Then he's a bum.
No, he's not a bum. And the best
part of it is get rid of him.
I had no reports yesterday of him punching himself in the thigh or freaking out or doing any of the dumb Mac Jones self-flagellation wound too tight. I don't think that is going to be an issue. I've actually had people, you know how we made the comparison to the Gronkowskis with his family and his brothers and him? I've actually had people that have had internal interactions with him at Gillette that have told me, yeah, there's definitely a little Gronk to him. He's a little bit of a Gronk-like version of a quarterback, and they meant it in a good way in terms of his mindset and his mentality and some of the work ethic and different things. And if you tell me that, if he is the Gronk of quarterbacks, I think we're going to be A-OK in a few months. I think that is going to go in the right direction. But we also do have to acknowledge.
High praise.
We also do have to acknowledge, like Brett Norton in the Twitch chat says, it's May 20th. Yeah, and they practiced on May 19th and May 20th, and we have to talk about it. That is actually the information we have at hand. And then when it's June 9th and they're in mini camp, we'll talk about that. And then when it's August 7th and they're playing preseason games, we'll talk about that. That's how this business works. We assess the information at hand. There were a couple other things that I found notable coming out of the notebooks. Did you guys take any note, think of anything? I saw that Cole Strange was taking right guard reps. He'd been a left guard here. Ted, you tell me. Is that nothing? Is it a big, like, he was a left guard, then he was a center, now he's a right guard. What are we doing with Cole Strange?
I think it's more of an indictment on Mike Onwenu. Did Mike Onwenu come in overweight? How does he look? Does he look like he's ready to go? There was a little bit of that last year. I read one support that might be the case again this year, that he didn't look like he came in, in the shape that you need to be. That maybe was a signal to the coaches, and so that might be the reason you're seeing Cole Strange playing more some right guard. He's also played left guard, so he's going both sides. He's playing left and right. So to see him at right makes me think that maybe, just maybe, that they're not totally happy and satisfied. Because let's face it, Mike Onwenu signed a big monster deal last year, and he didn't even come close to living up to that deal last year. And so maybe that's just their way. They need to create competition. I mean, and honestly, Cole Strange is a former first-round draft pick. Say what you will about him. Like, he didn't perform the way maybe you wanted, but he's still, nonetheless, a first-round draft pick. And so they need to create competition. And if that lights a fire under Mike's butt to maybe come into camp a little bit better in shape, then so be it. I think that's what that kind of explains, Andy.
And then the other one that stuck out to me that I don't love, because I think we all think the defense is going to be pretty good. They got two corners that are going to be pretty good, two defensive tackles that are going to be
pretty good.
The safety position is one that I think we have an eye on, and Marte Mapu not practicing. For a guy who's supposedly this, like, freakish, versatile athlete, is he a linebacker? Is he a safety? Well, I'll tell you what he is. He's a guy who's never on the field to start the off-season workouts and things of that. And you can't make the club from the tub, Ted.
No, you can't. And this guy came in with a lot of fanfare for a third-round draft pick. No disrespect. I mean, I think he went to a small school, right? I think he's from San Jose. Whatever. It doesn't mean he can't play in the NFL. But all this fanfare and how smart he is, I have yet to see him live up to even close to what he came in. I mean, even when he was in there last year, he just seems undersized. And I'm not sure, what is he? Is he a linebacker? Is he a safety? Is he a strong safety? Is he a free safety? I think we can all say he's not a free safety, but I didn't see his coverage skills really on display last year. And I think he's a little undersized to think that you can put him in the box, play in and play out too. So, that guy, look, I don't think they're going to miss too much. I think they do have a plethora of safeties. I do like their safety position, so I just think there's other guys that are better than him at this point. And so That's the Marte Mapu take for me.
I'll tell you who is a safety who did get some props yesterday. Craig Woodson. People say Woodson looked way better than they anticipated. Again, it is May 20th, and to the whole look what they look like out there. Morgan Moses, absolute unit. I'll just leave it at that as we go to commercial.
They're not pads, but I'll say this about Craig Woodson is he's 26 years old. So like
he's how old?
He's 26 years old. I mean, he's the oldest rookie they have. So if there's anybody that's going to look good from the rookie and be able
and
went to Cal, smart guy, it would be the 26-year-old.
He's on the 8-year college plan, apparently, at Cal, which is he's smart because he went to Cal, but somehow he was in college till he was 26. Anyway, we'll figure it out along the fly. 617-779-7937. Up next here on WEEI Afternoons, we got to get to that one segment per show where we talk about Jordan and what's going on with her. There's no red pants today. But there are tales of do we call it a cat fight? A Christmas party cat fight on Nantucket? That's next on WEEI Afternoons.
Bullying. Meow.
I'm Emma Greed, and I'm the host of the Aspire podcast, a show where I talk to the world's most brilliant minds about building the life of your dreams. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, more of WEEI Afternoons
with Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy Stevens, and Ted Johnson.
For us.
That was Bill Belichick talking to his buddy Ryan Clark. Yeah, the us could be North Carolina, could be Jordan. It could be that Jordan reportedly not only wanted a piece of ownership of the show, but also, come to find out later, thanks to the New York Times, was also negotiating with a different production company to do a similar show, competing production.
Balls on her.
She has big ones, tell you. I said it yesterday. She has big ones because that was Belichick on one of the other issues and scandals that Jordan has been a part of. Now we have word, thanks to People and Page Six and the voices out of Nantucket, that tell us there was a heated exchange between Linda Holiday and Jordan at a Christmas party in December. Jordan showed up without Bill Belichick. No Bill Belichick. And the girls that were DJing were Linda's daughters, her twin daughters. And apparently they went at it pretty, pretty good. There was a tense verbal exchange and some things were said. So, and this is on the heels of, we had the other report from whatever the Nantucket publication was, basically saying that Jordan is being iced out on Nantucket in the social circles that Linda has been entrenched in for a while now after, what were they together, like 15 years? Her and
16,
Belichick?
Yeah.
16 years. So, yeah, she's kind of entrenched out there, and the younger Jordan is trying to elbow her way into that whole situation. But the thing I took from this, like, Jordan had to have known that this party included Linda Holiday and Linda Holiday's daughters, and we said it's a small island. You probably know what the hell's going on. To go there without Bill, like, aren't you just asking for trouble? Or you're looking for trouble, or you're looking to assert yourself and kind of show your big ones and put them on the table, because that's ballsy.
Think she has, like, yes, ballsy? That's brass footballs, to say some. Do you think? You know, we've talked before about how Belichick has blind spots, Andy, socially and emotionally. Do you think she seems so hyper aware, so hyper focused that she couldn't possibly have the same kind of blind spots? But what in her coding and programming would make her think, oh, this will be a great opportunity for me to ingratiate myself into the scene, mend fences with Linda, and take a step forward?
Wait, that's what you think her intentions were?
What do you think her intentions were? To fight her and end up on World Star?
Her intentions were to, look, I'm here. I can buy a ticket and come in and be in your circle, right, and I'm dating your old guy. It's not to.
So that was, going number one on the corner of the sofa? You know what I mean?
No.
Marking territory, if you will?
Yeah. That's her peacocking and basically saying, I'm Bill's guy now, ha, ha, ha. And you know what? I can come to this party just like, you know, the rest of y'all. That is, she's very much wired very similarly to the guy she's
maybe
dating.
maybe she is then back to my first question. Maybe she is, because that is a level of discomfort I don't know if any of us could. I don't even think Sacha Baron Cohen could handle the discomfort of that.
She's kind of taking all this on. You know, she wants to be, look, this is her opportunity. She sees it. It's a power grab, and she's got opportunities that she's never had in her life. And so she's going to leverage everything she can to kind of get what she's always aspired to get, if you know what I'm saying.
And Ted, I know you printed out, you referenced it earlier in your three-point stance, I think, the New York Times article there.
It's an impressive document that's on this table right now.
It's a tome.
Highlighted.
She did. We talked about it with Pablo Torre when he was like, yeah, I talked to 11 people here and 10 people there. This woman, and Ted, I don't know if you have the name of the author of that New York Times article, but she...
Yeah,
Catherine Roseman, she went to P-Town, she went to Bridgewater State, went to the pizza place to see if there was any students that would talk to her. Like, she's been boots on the ground trying to really cover this story. And, you know, there's going to be more of that. That's the problem. Like, you referenced earlier Belichick controlling things. Yeah, it's one thing to control Andy Hart at Patriots.com or Mike Reese at the Boston Globe or the Patriots reporters that need to deal with you every day. No. These are now like investigative people that have worked in news and journalism for a long time, that they smell stories. They smell opportunities here, and they're going to work because people read them. People talk about them on the radio like we do. So I don't think we're done with the information here, Ted.
And I don't either. I think part of it, you guys, is that there's so much. It's like what she has done on his behalf, and what they're both doing together. It's amazing all the details, everything that they are trying to, the books, the trademarks, the charities, trying to just, control everything and optimize their position together as a couple is incredible. And there's so many details, the TMZ articles that keep coming out, this New York Times, it's detailed stuff. So people are talking. There's just, that's one thing I take away, is just, man, Bill doesn't really have anybody that's, it used to be so insular. No information never got out of Foxborough. Now it's everywhere. I think the fascination is, of course, the older guy dating the younger girl.
Yep.
And so that's what brings in the non-football fan, if you will.
Yeah, this is tabloid. This is, the old, I don't even know if they have them anymore, but the supermarket tabloids, all those lines.
Oh, they still got them. Oh, yeah.
Well, yeah, that's the world that this is going in now. This really isn't about Patriots, NFL, football, college football, or anything like that. This is about, celebrity, and as you said, a salacious relationship between an old guy
Mm-hmm. Well, Bill's book landed on the bestsellers.
Oh, I saw that.
Oh, you don't say. How about that?
Whose book?
Here we go. Andy's convinced that Jordan wrote the book. But
I can tell you who didn't write the book, Bill Belichick. There's no way in hell Bill Belichick wrote the book.
Yeah, but that happens a lot when
aren't you supposed
to
write it as told to?
I don't know. I don't think that's like the biggest hill you want to die on with that.
No, it's not. It's the least of his issues right now. The least of the things I would criticize him for right
now. And also, she can go to that Nantucket party. Like, it's a very, very big party in Nantucket and in Massachusetts, and in fact she went with one of her closest friends, Miss Massachusetts. So she did.
That's okay.
Oh, wow.
You had to know those things, what she was getting into. Like, you can't act like she didn't. She knew what she was getting into. Yeah, of course she can go. Just don't expect to be welcomed when you do go.
And she said to the lady that confronted her at the party, "Look, I didn't come here looking for a problem. I came here to enjoy a party with my best friend."
But wasn't she the problem just simply by walking in the door?
Yeah, you believe that?
She was Linda's problem.
She should have found a mirror.
She knew what she was doing. Absolutely. Anyway, up next here on WEEI Afternoons, we had a great conversation earlier in the show with Red Sox manager Alex Cora. He talked about another win without him on the bench. He talked about the need to go to his daughter's graduation. He answered the question if he had anything to say to the critics out there that criticized him for going to his daughter's graduation. Alex Cora up next with WEEI Afternoons.
I'm Emma Greed, and I'm the host of the Aspire podcast, a show where I talk to the world's most brilliant minds about building the life of your dreams. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, available now wherever you get your podcasts.